Good evening, everybody. My name is Russell Spatz. I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of the Carl Gables Group of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I haven't found necessary to have a drink since January 25th, 1981. I'm grateful to be here. It's been a real blessing for me, as always. It's a blessing, a great blessing for me to be able to participate in any AA meeting, and a special blessing to be asked to share my testimony regarding the 12 steps and how God has really changed my life. And I want to, you know, the truth is, if you've been around here for most of the 12 steps, you know I'm pretty much a one-trick pony. I tend to harp on and talk a lot about God and your relationship with God. You know, different people, you know, it's like AA is like a giant toolbox. There's a wrench to fit every nut that walks through the door, and there's guys that want to, you know, that, and it's nothing bad. It's like a giant symphony. You know, we all have our instruments we play, and there'll be some guys that come in and they'll talk a lot about nothing wrong with it, about their testimony as far as drinking is concerned and drinking escapades and different aspects and maybe a more psychological approach. And my approach is a little bit different. You know, I do believe, you know, this has been my experience, and I can only talk about my experience. It's all about building a relationship with God and the power of God working in your life and God transforming you and doing for you what you can't do for yourself. And now the good part about these steps is, although God runs throughout the steps, I think throughout the book, I think you have to be almost willfully blind not to see that. The good news is every once in a while I get to talk about God, and it actually has to do with the step. You know, like it's the third step and the 11th step, you know. So tonight we're going to talk a little bit about the 11th step. I'm going to touch a little bit on the 10th step. I'm not going to do a lot of it, but a little bit. This will sort of like mesh up 10 and 11 because I am starting. I have to do that, unfortunately, because I am starting a new step series this Tuesday. So I am going to try to talk about my experience, about how I've grown up in the 11th step. Now, you understand I've been sober for a little over 31 years, and I'm a different cat. I mean, I'm still an alcoholic, and I guess I'm about as alcoholic as anybody. You know, I'm not cured of this disease, although I have recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body. You know, that I can't stop drinking problem. But, and so I want to try to, obviously I'm a little bit different in what I'm not even saying I had any idea what the 11th step was about or what God was about when I came in here, and things have changed for me in the last 31 years, and I'm going to talk a lot about what's going on in my life now, because it's like fresh in my mind. What's going on now is fresher in my mind than back then, and try to share as honestly as possible my experience with y'all regarding the 11th step and the power of the 11th step working in my life. You know, there's an interesting thing about this book. I'm going to read some stuff from this book, Alcoholics Anonymous. The more I read it, and of course, a lot of you understand my story, in the book it even suggests, and I took up the suggestion. How about that? That's a strange thing. But you ever notice that you come to Alcoholics Anonymous and they suggest certain things, and the people that tend to stay around tend to, you know, they fight it. They say that's not me, or that's not for me now, or I'm not ready. You ever notice the ones that stay around end up taking up the suggestions? You ever notice that, like your sponsor says, do this, do that. Well, I'm different. That's not me. Next thing you know, you're doing it. It may be a year or two down the road. But here's the thing. You're doing it, but somehow you think it was like your idea. You know what I mean? Because it's sort of like, was that your idea? You know, he said, you know, like my sponsor said, you know, say the Lord's Prayer. And I said, well, I'm not really a believer. And he says, I don't care, say it anyway. And, you know, then I start saying it. And then I start thinking it's like my idea. And, they tell you to do stuff. You know, sponsor this guy or do this or do, and when you get far enough down the road, you're doing everything that they suggested you do, but somehow you think like you decided to do it. And I guess you did decide to do it, you know, but you end up doing it. And so, you know, a lot of that stuff sort of happened to me. But this big book, and so I did, there's a suggestion in the big book, I'm going to read about that, you join a religious group. I joined the church, you know, I'm very active in the church, started ministry there and do a lot of work in that deal, and I go to a lot of Bible studies and things like that, and I'm not saying you have to do it. I mean, God forbid I should even suggest that to an alcoholic, you know, and even though that's all they did the first 4 years, you know, go to Bible study and, you know, do that stuff, but, so the reading material that I read, the people I hang out with, you know, that's sort of like part of my 11th step experience. You know, you think about it, and I'm sort of jumping ahead of myself, just going right over to the 11th step. You think about it, after you come in here and you sort of like do AA slash God light, after you come in here, this is like a spiritual kindergarten. I mean, we're dealing with alcoholics. You know, we don't want to hear any of this crap. You know, we just, you know, stop drinking. Hey, listen, we're barely ready to hear about the stop drinking, don't hang around your old friend stuff, let alone the God stuff, you know, which is really what this whole thing is about after you get into it. But, you know, the truth of the matter is, you know, you come in here, when you think about it, after you get through the AA light and do the stuff that everybody does, almost, that stays sober for more than a couple of years in AA, you know, what's the stuff that everybody does? You know, they go to meetings, they say the Serenity Prayer before the meeting, they say the Lord's Prayer after the meeting. Most people, every once in a while, you got a guy who's just not going to do that, you know, for whatever. And you know, you have a sponsor, and every once in a while you say the Serenity Prayer, and you read the book, and you read the material. After you do the AA light, which everybody does, whether you've got one day or 50 years, okay, then you come to some step which says improve your conscious contact with God. But if you go to these meetings and you listen to these meetings, now let me tell you something. I happen to know that as far as prayer and meditation, let me tell you this. I think I've said this before. The Serenity Prayer, the moment of silence before the meeting and the Serenity Prayer, listen, it counts. It counts. The Lord's Prayer at the end, it counts. You may not think it makes a difference. You may not think it makes a difference. It counts. Listening to members of Alcoholics Anonymous patiently, whether you're bored or not, or just listening attentively to their story and meditating on what they say and thinking about it after the meeting, that counts. Reading the big book, reading the material, it counts. You know, thinking, it all counts towards 11th. It all counts towards the 11th step. But think about this. Essentially, I don't want to say everybody does it because I don't know everybody in AA, but most of the people I hang around that are even halfway serious do that stuff. So if you're going to improve your conscious contact, if you're going to go further with the God thing, which I'm going to talk about, what more could you possibly do? So don't look at me so strange when I say I joined the church and I studied the Bible. What more would you do? What do you think they're talking about? And I don't care if it's the Bible, the Quran, or the banana. I mean, what more? It obvious means we do more. We get involved more with people. And I'm going to read a little something that nobody even knows exists in the big book. You know, there's a certain spot. Because I do what they did, what most of them did, what Bill Wilson did, what Dr. Bob did. You know, where they said, we said, we're not ashamed, we don't, we lose all prejudice, even against organized religion. We begin to see where those people are right. We start hanging around those. I get involved. So I have a lot of friends who are pastors, who are missionaries. They don't have drinking problems. You don't have to have a chip in your pocket and be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous to be my friend today or for me to associate with you today. I go out every Saturday after the meeting. We have about 10 or 12 guys and about 8 of them in AA, and there's a couple of pastors that join us. And you don't have to be that deal, because I don't put this thing in a, I don't put God in a box and say AA has all the answers. Because you know why? Because I'm an 11th step guy. I'm thirsty, and I'm talking about being. You know, in the book of Jeremiah, it says you will find me when you hunger and thirst after me and seek me with all your might. And you want to know something? You start reading that stuff in the Bible, and it's all through the Bible. Find out it's all through AA. You know what it says in AA? It's, you know, this. The interesting thing about this crazy book, it's sort of like mysterious. The answer to every problem you have, to everything, is in this book, in the big book. And it's hidden in plain sight. And the reason it's hidden in plain sight is because in every single page, it screams what the answer is. In all the steps, it screams what the answer is. But the problem is alcoholics don't see it. And they don't see it not because it's not yelling and screaming. They don't see it because they don't want to see it. Because every bone in their body, in their flesh, says, I don't want to go there, not there, that's too much. And a few people, and so they go as far as they go, and then they quit. And then they stop. And you know, you can go pretty far in AA and then quit. Because you're not that thirsty or desirous of having what they had. And you'll still get something. I know they say half measures avail us nothing. You'll still get something. You might get 10 or 15 or 20 years sobriety. You may die sober. You'll get something. But you won't get as much of what you get if your whole life turns into hunger and thirsting after him. If you do what they say, abandon yourself utterly to him. And that takes a surrender that's a little bit bigger than just giving up the beer. That's a different type of surrender. But you know what the deal is? Most people in AA won't surrender that much. They really won't. It's just not going to happen. Substantial, most people, maybe 9%, are not prepared to go that route. But a few will. A few do. And so I want to talk a little bit about, you know, what's going on in my life and how it works for me. And I want to talk a little bit about this disease. I was at a meeting many years ago. I think I had about 3 years. And a woman said something at the meeting. She had about 10 or 12 years. And it was something, it was good. It wasn't a bad thing. She was talking about her life. She was honestly sharing about her life. And what she said, and I can't remember exactly how she said it. I want to say she said something like, you know, I've been in AA for 12 years. I've never had a bad day or something. You know, one of those things we say, it's all been wonderful or whatever. It was a nice thing. You know what I mean? And I remember thinking when she said, now, I had been going through a rough patch. I had about 2 or 3 years, and I wasn't doing that well. And, you know, I 2 or 3 years, you know, I was going through whatever you go through at 2 or 3 years when you're not going doing that well, when your mind's ganging up and you're worried and you're anxious and you're worried about all this sort of stuff. And when I heard her say, because, you know, what I've learned about this program is you don't see the world the way it is or people the way it is. You see it the way you are. If you feel crappy and crummy and crappy about yourself and you're self-conscious and you're full of fear, then that's the way you look and judge people. You know, I mean, for an alcoholic, you know, there's no, you know, we're the ones that we are cynical. We're not skeptical. Skeptical is, okay, prove it, I'm open-minded. Cynical is, that's a bunch of crap. That cynical is, you have already decided before you hear the testimony that it's all BS and you ain't listening. And that's where I start off as that's part of the disease of alcoholism, wanting to believe the worst. The worst is going to happen to you, the worst in people, not trusting as drinking alcohol. And that's just the truth with me. That's the kind of alcoholism I have. You may not have that kind of, you know, somebody says, you know, I'm the guy who says it's too good to be true. No, that's just too good. I heard that guy talk, it's too good to be true. It can't possibly be true. I never say it's too bad to be true. It's too bad to be. I say, hey, if it's bad, it must be true. You know? So when you got a gal, when I'm going through a tough time, and I can't go to sleep at night, and I'm a thumb-sucking crybaby, and I'm not drinking, but things aren't great, and I have money problems, and some gal gets up and maybe tells the truth and says, you know, my life has been incredible, and Alcoholics Anonymous, I say, this gal is pretty much full of crap. And I'm not even listening, because I just don't believe it. I don't believe it, because that's not my deal. That's not part of my deal. So you know, there's a lot of stuff said in this book. There's a lot of testimony given. There's a lot of things going on which we just don't believe or don't want to believe. And how alcoholics get past that, well, I know how they get past that. They get past that. They tell you how we get that past that, because some people want what we have and are willing to go to any length to get it. And that means they see a person or people in here who have latched onto this thing and have broken through, and they want it so badly that they're willing to suspend their disbelief and their own thinking and saying, I'm going with that guy, even though it doesn't make sense for me, because I want this thing so bad, I'll do whatever they tell me to do. And those people make it. And the ones that don't, and I don't know how to instill desire for God and people. I just don't know how to do that. That's something that's got to come from you or somebody else. You know, you want to be skeptical. You know, Dr. Bob says, if you don't believe what we say in this book, or you have some sort of still intellectual pride that keeps you from seeing this, I feel sorry for you. Your heavenly Father will never let you down. And they meant that stuff, because it happened to them. And it's happened to me. And so I remember a time, I'm going to start off this way. Anybody ever remember a time where they couldn't stop drinking? This is Alcoholics Anonymous. Am I an Alcoholics Anonymous? This ain't the Boy Scouts, right? Listen, I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I couldn't stop drinking. I looked the guy in the eye. You know what I said to him? I said, I need help. I can't stop drinking. I didn't say I need money. I said, I can't stop drinking. So you're all alcoholics, right? I don't know if this is close to me or not. Okay, Red, you remember when you couldn't stop drinking? Now listen to me. I want you to understand this. I couldn't stop drinking. Now, I shouldn't have to sell that idea to you. We are hopefully in complete agreement that it is entirely possible for a person to get to a point in his life where he can't stop drinking no matter what. Are we cool on that? I mean, we may differ on the God thing, but are we cool on I can't stop drinking thing? Because if we're not cool on that, we're going to have a real problem here. Because I wandered into okay, now. And when you're in your life, and I was 31 years old when I reached the end of my rope. Some people are in 40, 50. When you're at the point in your life where you can't stop drinking, no matter what, and it's going down the tube, now, you and I both know that not only can't you stop drinking, you can't stop feeling sorry for yourself, you can't stop being angry, you can't stop thinking about suicide. There's a lot of things you can't stop doing, but you don't even think about that stuff. You think about the stuff that you can't, because your life has become such a bottle that all you can think about is the booze at that point. The fact that you're all so crazy and nuts and your mind is ganging up on you is just like it's like an afterthought, you know? You finally come to the conclusion that you can't stop drinking. At the same time, if you have that thing going for you, you probably have the other thing going for you that I had. That not only you can't stop drinking, you can't even envision a life of not drinking. You ever have that going?
Yeah.
Like it's never going to happen to me. I'm never going to be able to stop drinking. So when somebody comes up to you and says, you know, why don't you stop drinking? You don't even, drinking's killing you. Or whatever they're saying to you. Why can't you be like your brother Gary? Or whatever they say to you. You ain't even listening. It's like talk to the hand because the ears are, you know, I mean the face ain't listening. You're not even listening because they don't let's use an alcoholic phrase. You just don't understand. Because they just don't understand what it's like when you can't stop. I've tried that. I can't stop drinking, right? You get that? So imagine how incredible it is when some guy comes up to you and he says, you don't have to drink anymore, and you follow him into an AA room, and 2 days later you stop drinking. Wow. That's power, isn't it? And that's only the symptom of the disease. That's not even the disease. And that's even before you believe in God. You know, you just believe that maybe there's a possibility that there may be something. And imagine how incredible it is where a week or two down the road or 3 weeks or a month down the road that not only you're not drinking, but you've lost even the desire to drink. You've lost the obsession of drinking. You're not, and maybe that'll take 6 months. Maybe it'll take a month. You lose the constantly thinking about you not drinking. You know, you're on to the bigger stuff like, I want to kill myself. You know? The bigger and better stuff like, why are they talking to me like that? And why does my mother treat me that way? And when am I going to get money? And why don't I have a relationship? You get on to the better stuff of just worrying about every other nuance in your life, you know, and becoming totally self-focused. But hey, there is an immense distinction between what they say we have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of body. There's a big difference between saying I'm not going to drink today and then 3 hours later getting drunk. There's a big difference between not being able to stop drinking and then all of a sudden drinking isn't even part of the equation anymore, right? Can we agree on that? Good, good. This is going to work out, okay? So now that I've stopped drinking, so there's a power. So would you agree there's some sort of power working in here? There's a power here, isn't it? So you know when you stop drinking, have you ever noticed that when you stop drinking, you have 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 3 years, you ever have noticed that your mind starts working again? That's a real problem, isn't it? Have you ever noticed that whenever you feel kind of crummy or lousy about yourself and other people, that it's always after a lot of thinking? You ever notice that one of the problems, you ever say to yourself, I got to stop thinking about this, but you can't stop thinking about it? It's almost like drinking. It's like, you used to say, I can't stop drinking. They say, I can't stop thinking. I can't stop worrying. You ever worry about something, but you don't worry about something a little bit. You worry about something like forever. It's like unending, you know, you don't worry about money a little bit. You worry about money forever. You don't worry about dying a little bit. You worry about dying forever. You just worry, 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 worry. As an alcoholic. So So now, so because you can't, you know, because here's the, and you know, I don't know how you feel, but, you know, worry and fear and anger and resentment, all that sort of stuff, that doesn't really make me feel good. Does that make you feel good? You'd rather not do it, right? Just like you wanted to stop drinking. But, you know, if I was to say to you that you don't ever have to worry about anything ever again, you would say to me, you might say to me something like this, you don't understand. You don't understand. I've tried not to worry. I can't worry. You might say to me the same thing that you said about the booze. And believe it, you might even have this other thought, not being able to envision a life without worry. Envision a life without freedom from bondage to things. Envision a life without thinking about what other people think about you. Envision a life where you feel calm and peaceful and comfortable in your own skin. You might not even be able to envision that, because the way you think, like when an alcoholic guy says, I can't even envision a life that will ever be that way. Now, I know the big book says a new freedom, a new happiness, lose fear, people of economic. I know it says all this fancy stuff. We lose fear of today, yesterday, and tomorrow. We were reborn. The great fact is this, but nothing less. We've been rocking in the fourth dimension of existence. We've experienced much of heaven. The great fact that he's living in our hearts. I know it says all that, but come on. You know, what about when you're in the midst of it, like I was with that lady? Even though they're fancy words and they're good words, what you want to say is when you're 3 years and when you're 5 years and you're 10 years and you're going through the bullshit, you know what I mean? What you want to say is what I said to that lady. I said, I'm not even listening because that ain't going to happen. That's not my deal. I'm going nuts here. I've been working this thing for 10 years. I've been working this thing for 15 years. I've been working this thing for 6 years. But then you read in this book. And you, every once in a while, not only do you read in this book, but every once in a while, run into a guy that's been doing it for a while. And he seems, now listen to this, he seems, seemingly, nobody, and I'm going to tell you this, nobody's perfect. And I don't claim to be perfect or anything. But seemingly, from a relative standpoint, because it's progress, not perfection, they seem to illustrate or be illustrative of what they're talking about in this book. It seems like, almost like in a person, not that we put people in, you run across somebody that seems to be, that sort of deal seems to be working in them. Like I ran across people where they just seem always steady. They seem always the same. There's no like ups, there's no downs. You know, there's just something about the person that, you know, it's like pornography. I can't define it, but I know what it is when I see it. You just see somebody and said, this person's latched onto something different. You know what I mean? It's like when Alcoholics Anonymous number 3 was looking at Bill Wilson. He says, I knew there was something more. You know, Bill Dodson. I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. You know, that's what he said. He said he was watching, and he wasn't drinking, but he said, I knew there was something more, something I hadn't got. I used to hang out with, you know, guys like Joe Snyder and Ray O'Keefe and all those guys. I said, and man, and they had 25, 30 years or something. And I was sober, and they were sober, and I was working a program, and I guess they were working a program, but we had a different deal. Let me tell you something. It was like sometimes I talk about, who's that, Tiger Woods. I mean, I play golf, and he plays golf. I use clubs, and he loses clubs. I use Titleist balls, he uses Titleist board. I'll play the Blue Monster, and he plays Blue Monster. But we are definitely playing a different game. There's a different thing going on. Well, you run into people in here where you can touch them and feel them. It's not just a theory. They're actually living out the promises in this deal. So you somehow know, if you've got your eyes wide open, that there are people that are hitting that mark, hitting that deal. What Bill Wilson called the next frontier, emotional sobriety. But we suffer from unhealthy dependencies. And they're living that new freedom. And that new, you may not know what that new freedom is. You may not even know what that new happiness is, but you can sort of like sense it in somebody else. And it says, if you want what we have and you're willing to, so this idea of seeing something in front of you, being able to see and saying, I want that. I want, now, the only thing you may see when you first come in here is people not drinking. That may be the only thing you want, and you wanted some, you pretty much can grab that pretty fast. And you may see, you know, one day, you know, you're mad and you have resentments, people not resenting. You may grab onto that, but there's so much more. So I want you to, you don't have to trust me, I'm just going to explain to you that everything that you read in the big book, everything you read in here, everything they tell you that can happen to you, is true. It's true. I mean, I know when we first read the big book, we read about the jaywalker. You know the jaywalker, the guy who says, I'm going to stop jaywalking, and then he starts doing that. And you feel, if you're an alcoholic, what happens is you live your entire life knowing that you're different. Your song as an alcoholic is, you don't understand, I'm unique, my problems are different. So the first thing that happens when we come in here is we can't believe that there are other people like us. So you read that stuff about the jaywalk in the book, and you can't put it down. You say, this is me, this is me. You think that somebody like developed this entire program for you, you know, because it's all about you. And then you hear all these people, and you're so excited because it's all about you, you know. And mostly what you're thinking about is the drinking and sort of thinking, well, imagine, and so you get excited because you can't stop drinking, and that's the problem, and you're excited that there's a way out. Well, imagine what happens. Imagine what happens when you read stuff like this. When you read stuff like this. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. The great fact is just this and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude towards life, towards our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do for ourselves. Imagine if you started identifying with that. Do you think it's possible to identify with that? I know you can read it. You might get excited about it. You might get interested in it about it. You might try to figure out what they're saying. But imagine if, like the jaywalker, you read that, and you identified because God, you were absolutely certain that God was a central fact of your life. It was the most important thing in your life. And miraculous things had happened to you. Imagine if, just suppose that they put that in there because they were giving their true testimony and they weren't lying. They just weren't making up things. That it wasn't a theory. That this had actually happened. That not only had the booze been lifted from them, but they had been set on a new path. And they were completely, they were new creations. They were like new people. They were born again. They were completely different. Their whole life had changed. Imagine if they were just not joking, just writing fluffy stuff. Imagine if it happened to you, and you read that and you said, "I know what they mean because that's exactly what's going on with me." That'd be almost as amazing, if not more amazing, than the jaywalker thing, than the booze thing, wouldn't it? Pretty exciting, right? Well, imagine what would happen if you read this part of the book on page 63. Where it talks about turning your will and your life over to God, surrendering to Him. You know? Well, when we sincerely took such a position, all sorts of remarkable things happened, followed. We had a new employer being all-powerful. He provided what we needed if we kept close to Him and performed His work well. Established on that footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. And you know, alcoholics, all they do is think about themselves. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of our problems. Always worrying about yourself, thinking about yourself. Imagine if you read that, established such a footing, we became less and less interested in ourselves and our little plans and designs. More and more, we became interested in seeing what we could contribute to life. As we felt new power flow in, as we enjoyed peace of mind. As we discovered we could face life successfully, as we became conscious of His presence, we began to lose our fear of today, tomorrow, the hereafter, we were reborn. Now, what if you read that one day and you said, well, I don't really think about myself that much. That thing about less and less interested in ourselves, little plans. Yeah, I am more interested. I'm more interested in seeing what's happening with other people, and I want to basically try to help other people. Imagine if you felt that thing, that you felt new power flow in, and you did enjoy peace of mind. Imagine if you didn't have a mind that was ganging up on you and thinking bad thoughts about yourself and other people all the time. Imagine if you even had a mind where sometimes you were just driving along and you weren't thinking anything. That, you know, instead of thought after thought after thought after thought after thought, you know, like condominiums, towers of thoughts after thought after thought after thought, the committee. Imagine if that went away. Imagine if all that stuff and you had a consciousness of His presence and you began to lose fear of today, tomorrow. What if you didn't lose? You weren't constantly projecting what's going to happen tomorrow or what did I do yesterday? And what if you did lose fear? What if you read that and you said, that's me. And it wasn't a theory. What if they, when they wrote that down, they were talking about what was actually happening to them, which I don't think has anything to do with the alcohol. I think it has to do with their mind and what was going on, how they were being transformed. What if they weren't lying? What if they put down stuff in this book that was actually happening to them because of some power, because of an incredible power, because of God's power, and they were writing down the truth? What if that was possible? I don't think they were kidding. Now, what if you were reading that one day? Let's say you had 25 years or 30 years, and you said, that's me. No further explanation, that's me. And it was as clear to you as to not drink, because that's your life. And it said there, we thought well before taking this step, making sure we were ready that we could at last abandon ourselves utterly to death. What if that was you? Would that be a pretty cool thing? That'd be a pretty cool thing. What would sobriety be for you then? Would it be just like not drinking? I mean, not drinking is good, but that's like the tip of the iceberg. What would your life be like then if you weren't worried about yourself, you weren't worried about what's going to happen to you, you weren't? What would your life be if you were told you had cancer and it didn't bother you? Do you think that's possible? Mm-hmm. Think it's possible to be told you have cancer and not have it not bother you? Sounds kind of impossible, right? You'd like to think somebody tells you that is full of shit, right? You think that's possible? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see to it how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness, self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Which I think means our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. Does it say we're going to get rich? Does it say we're all going to have money? Does it say we're never going to be broke? It says we just won't worry about it. What would that be like if you were broken yet it didn't bother you? You know, that's that. I know you'd like to have that. You don't have that experience. When you're broke, you say, "Where can I get the money?" You worry about money. You know, but you think so. You maybe think. Well, this guy's pretty much full of crap. That's impossible, right? We will intuitively know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. So you think they were really lying? You think they were just making up stuff? Or do you think they were just giving their testimony? What would it be like to have, what would a life be like to have that stuff actually happen to you? Not once in a while. Now listen to me. Not once in a blue moon. Not 5 minutes a week or 10 minutes a week or, you know, on Tuesdays or something like, but forever all the time. What would your life be like? How would your life change? How would your thought life change? How would your relationship with other people change? How would your actions change? Now, I'm not saying I don't believe, based upon my own life, that anybody, and I understand this, and it doesn't really bother me, can do this perfectly. Or become sinless and all of a sudden Jesus-like and, like, rise up to the stars. I don't see anybody with wings, and I don't have them, in Alcoholics Anonymous. Let me tell you something. It's progress, not perfection. But there is a big difference between thinking about yourself and worrying about this stuff and being anxious and having anxiety and having a fear-riddled life with, you know, fear being the thread, the corrosive thread that runs through your life, and having a life like that, okay, and a bad 3 minutes every week or a difficult 3 minutes every week. A big difference, okay? You know, I'm still human. Still on the planet, you know? I mean, I'm going to be striving for that. But you want to know something? Once you get a taste of that, if that life is real and if it's true and you get a taste of that, wouldn't you want more? Well, it's His power that's going to get you there. You're not going to get it on yourself. Why wouldn't you want to do this 11-step deal? And then you get to step 11. It says this. I'm not going to do a whole thing on step 10, but I want to point out something. When they're talking about step 11, they say this: much has already been said about receiving strength, inspiration, and direction from Him who has all knowledge and power. That's where you get it from. If we have carefully followed directions, we have begun to sense the flow of His Spirit. All that is capitalized. It's all about a deity, His Spirit. To some extent, we have become God-conscious. We have begun to develop this vital sixth sense, but we must go further, and that means more action. Here we go. Step 7 suggests prayer and meditation. We shouldn't be shy about this matter of prayer. Better men than we are using it constantly. It works if we have the proper attitude and work at it. I would be easy to be vague about this matter, yet we believe we can make some definite and valuable suggestions. Now, sometimes I was at a meeting today, and they closed with the Lord's Prayer, and, you know, there was one guy. You always find, every once in a while, one guy, he's just not going to say it. He's going to stand in the back of the room. You know, this is Alcoholics Anonymous. You can do whatever you want to do, as long as you don't disrupt the meeting. But, you know, if this is our book and if this is our basic book of understanding, this is the book that really gets us to where we're supposed to go and you want this thing. And it says, if you follow directions, honestly, the first thing is to be honest to yourself and you follow directions. And it says if we have carefully followed directions. You know what it says in the front of the big book on page 26? It puts it this way. Makes it very clear that this is about obedience. Something to, you know, alcoholics love this stuff about we love you and everything, but you don't like the word obedience. You don't like the word discipline. Hey, listen, you know what happens in here? Let me tell you what the truth is. The truth is about life and being an alcoholic. You're beaten into submission. You didn't come in here because you were beaten it. You didn't come in here because you wanted it. You come in here because you were beaten into submission. And to the extent that you don't do what you're told to do in here, you're supposed to do this, life will beat you into submission. The sad news is some of us will be beaten into submission and we'll be like, you know, 90 years old in our deathbed and we'll finally say, why didn't I do it this way? And it'll be way too late because this ain't a dress rehearsal. Yeah. It says right here on page 26. No, 29, I'm sorry. It says, further on, clear-cut directions are given showing how we recovered. These are followed by 42 personal experiences. Each individual in the personal stories describes in his own language and from his own point of view the way he established his relationship with God. It's all about relationship with God and building that relationship with God. That's where the power comes in. I'm not ashamed. In the book it says we never apologize for God. I'm not ashamed about talking about God, about my relationship, and doing whatever I have to do to get closer to him, because that relationship with God, that's the only power that gets away the drinking and gets you to go further so you don't have to go through the thinking anymore. That's the power that saves us in here. His power. That's why they talk about it in here. That's why it's hidden in plain view. That's because all they talk about is the power of God in the 11th step, in the third step, in every step we have, and in every AA meeting you go to, you have 1, 2, or 17 people say, I don't want to hear that God stuff. And since we're all codependent to a certain degree and we sit around worrying about what other people think about us, we would rather listen to them and not talk about God because we're scared that they may not like us than follow the directions of this book. Because this book doesn't scream as loud as most of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous that don't want to do this anyway, because they're predisposed not to work this program because they're sick. Because they're saying, well, People's Anonymous. So you got a whole group of people, hundreds of people, that want to get away with doing this as little as possible without surrendering, you know what I mean? And yelling and screaming through every way possible, body language and everything, saying, stay away from this area because you're making me uncomfortable. And you got a big book that's kind of very silent and you can skip over it and everything. And so people at meetings sort of skirt this issue and stay away from it. And they don't talk about God. You know? And, you know, I'll have people come up to me and say, you know, I've never heard anybody talk about God the way you talk about God. And you mention the Bible. And I said, well, they do it at every meeting I go to. Every meeting I go to, I talk about this stuff. So you might want to ask yourself, why is it that it isn't predominant in AA? Why isn't the big book, why isn't this stuff predominant in AA if this is the answer? If this is the answer. You might want to ask yourself that. Now, the truth is you're probably not going to change AA. Because unfortunately or fortunately, it's pretty much made up of alcoholics. So you're going to get the once over the light treatment, and through every possible machination, they're going to say, oh, that guy thinks he's holier than thou. They're going to sort of put down people or try to humiliate people or try to, like what we do, too good to be true, and try to squelch that message, the message of the big book, so that you feel even uncomfortable about bringing it up in a meeting, your walk with God. And that's what's going to happen. But some of you, not all of you, some of you, because we are so codependent and so worried about what other people think about ourselves, live our whole lives, you know. I mean, before we do anything, most alcoholics, you know, I'd like to think I'm perfect about this, but I'm probably not, but for the most part it's been removed. Most alcoholics, before they do anything, run it by the filter, what will they think about me? You know, that's true. You know, I suggest to somebody, why don't you come over to my Bible study? I know the first thing he's thinking is, but what do they think about me? What will Sally think? What will my group think about me? It's all living their whole life based upon not what they want to do or what they want to investigate, an entire life based upon what they think the world wants them to conform to so that nobody will laugh at them because they feel so crappy about themselves and their whole self-image is so low and so fragile that they have to worry about, if they make a decision to try to help themselves, what will the person in the front row of Alcoholics Anonymous think about them if they do it, as if that person really gives a crap anyway. And they live their entire life that way. And, of course, we don't even know that. You know, the first step of getting out of jail is knowing you're in jail in the first place. And most people don't even know that's the way they live their lives. They sort of walk around here thinking they have free will, and they don't do anything free. They're all doing what everybody else is doing, like cattle, you know what I mean? Going along with stuff. And they see some guy not doing that, and they're like amazed. How does he do that? You know what I mean? Because he's free. Because he's not worried about what you think about him. He's worried because he has a relationship with God. And the only thing that's important to him is his relationship with God, and nobody can take that away. Nobody can take away my relationship with the God of my understanding. And that's the only thing that's important. I'm not worried about what you think about me. I'm worried about what he thinks about me. But that doesn't come necessarily naturally. I mean, you're given the gift. You're given a gift of coming in here and being a little bit open-minded, so maybe you'll listen to somebody. Whether or not you have desire to go through with that and follow through with that has more to do with whether you really want this thing or whether you want this free gift that's given to you and you have the courage and the guts to do it, or you're more worried about what your wife, what your girlfriend, what your cousin, or what some guy in AA thinks about you. So it says right here, and then the interesting thing is when they're talking about the 11th step, it says, when we retire at night, we constructively review our day. When we're resentful, dishonest, do we owe an apology? They go through a whole 10-step deal. But that shouldn't be hard to understand. Bill Wilson talked about the worldly clamors, talked about the pulp, talked about the stuff out there. Because what you learn in here, ultimately, is that you're also, that most alcoholics are also addicted to cars and sex and women and the opposite sex. And they're addicted to relationships. They're addicted to a lot of things that are detrimental to them. It's all about not focusing on him because you got to do this. Not focus on him because it's all about distracting yourself from the crud. It's all about doing stuff. It's all about buying a blouse or getting a new haircut or getting a car or getting a new job or doing anything to distract you from your crummy situation because you feel so crummy about yourself. Because being an alcoholic is all about being a nothing. You know, being a nothing and not having anything and being worthless and having to have something. You know, if only I had this, I'll be okay. If only I had a husband, I'd be okay. If only I had a wife, I'd be okay. If only I had a car, I'd be okay. If only I had a new job, I'd be okay. And we strive, we run around, we push people around and go crazy and worry about getting that stuff or losing that stuff. And then we get it and you want to know something? We're not even close to okay. It works for us just like the alcohol worked. That's why we used alcohol. We drink because we like the effect produced by alcohol. We're restless, irritable, and discontent unless we can again experience a sense of ease and comfort. We're cleansed at once by taking a few drinks. At once by buying a new car. At once by getting a new shirt or a new blouse. At once by losing 10 pounds. At once by getting a new boyfriend, a new girlfriend. At once. And it lasts for a season, a few days or something, and then you're on the prowl again because it's never enough. But you think it's the answer to your problem like you thought booze was because you get the initial joke, the initial okay, where all of a sudden you're okay, but you're never okay because it's all an outside fix for an inside job and only he can do that deal. And you're not willing to do that deal. Because you don't want to go the narrow way. You want to go the broad highway like everybody else in the world. And you look at the billboards and you look at the TV and you look at the entire planet Earth and they're all going the other way. They're not doing this stuff. You know something? You want to sum the entire... Here's the good news. The guys that don't want to do this stuff, don't want to rely on God, don't want to do this thing, here's the good news. The world thinks just the way you do. The entire planet thinks the way you do. As a matter of fact, God forbid, the planet should think the way I do, the entire economy would smash down. Macy's would go out of business. Bloomingdale's would die. You know what I mean? Our entire economy would be wrecked. Our entire economy is built upon greed and lust. And sexual, I'll tell you, when you go out there today, as you're driving around, why don't you just look at the billboards? Buy this, do that, and see what's on the billboards. And these are the messages you're getting 24/7, and you're trying to figure out why going to one or two meetings a week doesn't work for you. When the entire world's screaming at you to go after the booze, you know what I mean, in the form of sex, money, objects, and everything like that, and this thing is saying, look to him. Do whatever you can to get to him. Hang out with people that are talking about him. And you don't want to do that. He's talking, Russell, he's talking about religion. He's talking about that. You don't want to do that stuff. You want to hang out in the world. And then it says, in thinking about our day, we may face indecision. We may not be able to determine which course to take. Here we ask God for inspiration, an intuitive thought or a decision. We relax and take it easy. We don't struggle. We are often surprised how the right answers come after we've tried this for a while. Now, here's the paragraph I want to read to you. Imagine this deal. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still and experienced and having just made conscious contact with God, it is not probable that we're going to inspire at all times. We might pay for this presumption and also absurd actions and ideas. Nevertheless, now listen to this. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more on the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. You know what they're saying? They're saying you will change. And it won't be just, you know, when I first came to AA, you know, everybody experiences this. You know, maybe the first year or 2 years. You find yourself in a situation, like it's strange, you know, maybe, you know, with your mother, your father, your sister, it doesn't matter, your boss, and something happens to you. Maybe somebody says something bad to you or they attack you or whatever. It's some sort of situation. And somehow you almost automatically react perfectly. You hit the ball out, you say exactly the right thing. It's like the perfect thing. Like where you would usually yell and scream or hide your head or do something, you say the perfect thing. Or you do the perfect thing, and usually when you do it, there's no thought involved. You just do it almost automatically. And then you run into your group, and you'll say, you wouldn't believe what happened the other day. My mother said this, my father said this, my brother did this, my brother, and that happened. And whenever that happens, I usually drink or die or scream or yell or blah, blah. And you know what I said? I said, well, that's okay, Mom. Don't worry. Do whatever you want to do. And it was like perfect. And then this is what it's followed. It's followed by saying this. And you don't understand. That's not me. You don't even take credit for it. You say, I can't take. That's not me. That's not the way. That's not me. Because you're so excited that it's like your body's being taken over by this new thing that does things perfectly. You know, like Tiger Woods. You know, all of a sudden your body's being taken over by Tiger Woods and you can't believe it. You say, it's not me. And you don't even understand what's going on because it's new and it's different. And you know what it says? It says that's inspirational thinking. That's not the kind of thinking you delve into where you're thinking, how do I handle this and what do I do and going to sleep at night and worrying. This is thinking that it sort of like happens like that and it seems to come from there, up there. Just sort of floats right in, you know? And you just know what to do. Not because you thought about it, you just know what to do. And you know what it says about that thinking, that inspirational thinking? It says we come to rely on it. It becomes a working part of the mind after a time. 10 years, after 20 years, after 30 years, you become used to it. Imagine what your life would be like if everything you handled was through that inspirational thinking, that spiritual discernment. That's what the 11th step is about. That's what you're talking about here. That's what the deal is. That's what sobriety is about. And so later on in the book, it says, so what do you do to do the 11th step? I don't know. I know what I did. You know, I didn't, none of this stuff I did necessarily voluntarily, but it says in the chapter, I'll give an example right here. It says this in the chapter, The Family Afterwards. I want you to read this. This is our big book. It says, though a family has no religious connections, they may wish to make contact or take membership in a religious body. Did you know that's there? I know. You ever hear people say, I'm spiritual, not religious? Like it's almost like they say it like, I'm better than you. I'm like higher. I'm like, you don't understand. You're like religious, but I'm like at a higher plane. I've got this quality of spirituality. I don't know about you. I'm the most unspiritual person in the world. I was not born with spirit. You know what I am? I'm selfish and self-centered. You're spiritual? Let's see what happens when the check bounces. Let's see what happens when you have cancer. You know, we'll see about that, dude. You know what I mean? You know what it says? Though a family has no religious connection, we may wish to make contact with or take membership with a religious body. Alcoholics who have derided religious people will be helped by such contacts. Will be helped by such contacts. Do you know these guys in the beginning, all they did was hang around Sam Shoemaker, you know, and Ed Dowling, you know, Father Ed Dowling, all that stuff. All they did, they didn't put down religious people. They read the Bible. It was like a great adjunct to them. They learned a lot from these people. When did all of a sudden AA become like the enemy of religion? Now listen, I understand this. Alcoholics Anonymous is not allied with any sect, religion, or anything like that. I understand that. But I'll tell you something. You better get allied with something. That has nothing to do with you personally getting allied. That doesn't mean you shouldn't get allied. The book says just the opposite. You know, that's our problem. We're loose cannons. You know, we're all by ourselves. We do what we want to do. And you know what happens to loners here? We die. Alcoholics who have derided religious people will be helped by such contacts. Being possessed of a spiritual experience, the alcoholic will find that he has much in common with these people, though he may differ with them on many matters. If he does not argue about religion, difficult for alcoholics, but if he doesn't argue, he will make many new friends and is sure to find new avenues of usefulness and pleasure. And then it talks about the family and everything like that. Does that sound like anti-religious? Does that sound like these guys say, I'm spiritual, not religious? So what happens when you see a guy in AA and says, I don't want to hear that stuff, or I'm spiritual, not religious? What is that? You know what that is? I'm going to define it for you. Resentment. Unwillingness. That has nothing to do with the program. That has to do with the disease. You better learn to recognize when somebody's exhibiting the disease, as opposed to what he's talking about as far as the program is concerned. You know, you just read the book for yourself. Don't trust me to figure out whether you're talking to somebody who's got a disease of unwillingness or stubbornness or pride or thinking he's smarter than everybody else, or whether he's humble or whether he's other than that, or whether you're talking about somebody who's open-minded, really exhibiting non-tolerance and really trying to work this thing. Because in order to work this thing, that's the deal. You get incredible benefits, but not without sacrifice. Not without sacrificing yourself. Not without dying to yourself. This is all about selfishness and self-centeredness. You know, don't tell me you don't want to do it. Who cares what you want to do or not? When you've turned your will and your life over to God and you made that commitment and you've abandoned yourself utterly to Him, what is the fact that you don't want to do it have anything to do with anything? Or maybe you don't understand the words entirely ready. Maybe you don't understand the words in the sixth step. And they said, this is what separates the men from the boys. Any man who's trying in his life to repeat it, to do whatever he has to do to grow in the image and likeness of his creator. Maybe you don't understand what they were saying. Maybe you don't understand what they're saying in this big book when they talk about the stuff they talk about. You know, what are the implications of this? So what do you think they're talking about? Well, I know we're in AA light. In AA light, that stuff has no meaning. They don't even talk about that stuff because it's uncomfortable. You're getting in. Hey, Russell, forget it. You're not talking about, you're getting into meddling. Yeah, I'm meddling. Yeah. I'm meddling. It ain't going to kill you. You know, whenever you're disturbed, anybody gets disturbed by it, whenever you're disturbed, no matter what the cause, there's something wrong with you. So here's the deal. If you're disturbed, if you don't like what I'm saying, you need to check into that. As a matter of fact, you ought to give me a $40 copayment. I'm helping you out. You've been living your life undisturbed, thinking you're doing okay complacently. You walk out of here saying, I hate that guy, Russell. I can't believe he said that. You got to say, man, I ought to look into that. And then when you do your four-step on it, you talk to your sponsor, and you figure out what the problem is, and you grow a little bit, you can come in, you can say, listen, I used to hate you, but now I love you. That's how we learn in here. We get disturbed, we get bothered by stuff, and the stuff that disturbs us, bothers us, you know, sticks in our mind, and we think about it all the time and everything like that. And if we really want this stuff, and if we're really in the program, we don't continue to resent or hate. We realize that that's a problem, so we say, I got to get rid of the resentment and hatred, and you got to start working on the stuff I said that's bothering you. And as soon as you start working on it, you start doing inventory on yourself, you see something yourself as to why it's bothering you, you pray about it, you talk to your sponsor about it, and next thing you know, you're a different person. And you change. That's the process. The process is about being irritated, being pissed off, being crushed, having things happen to you. And the guys that say, that refuse to follow that process, refuse to do the program on it, just continue with their resentment. I don't want to listen to that guy, and you know, everything like that, and they never change. And they may stay sober. They may get their 20-year medallion, a 30-year medallion, but they ain't going to get this deal, what they're talking about in here. You understand what I'm saying? And so that's what happened to me. That's just happened to me. And I don't even know why. I can't, and this is the truth. I know this sounds crazy. I don't even know why. I can't take credit for it. That's why I think it's such a gift. Because I see so many people that don't latch on to this thing and don't get this thing and are living lives of quiet desperation. You know what I mean? And are sucking their thumb even at 20 years and 25 years and are either blowing their brains out or suicidal or angry or mad or, you know, living a life, you know, they got 25 years and they act like they got 3 months, you know what I mean? And this kind of stuff going on, I see it, and you can't even talk to them because they got too much, because they know everything, but that's all they know. You know what I mean? And they got so much AA, they're so smart in AA, and they've collected so many medallions that you can't tell them anything. They can't say, yeah, but I got 25 years, yeah, but why don't you tell your face? You know what I mean? Because you look like you got 2 days and you're angry. You know what I mean? What are you so pissed about? You know? What are you so angry about? Why are you so bothered? Why do you have to walk out of the meeting while it's going on? What's bothering you? You got 25 years. You can't sit in a meeting for an hour. You can't listen to people. Somebody says something. You're that. That's what I find out about. That's when you find out about sobriety. How easily somebody gets pissed off. That's not sobriety. My deal. You can't even listen to somebody or listen to a different, that's sobriety. That's what you want? Hey, listen, I had that. Before I came to AA, I had that. That's what I was like before I came to AA. You want that? You want what you had before? That's what gets you drunk. That's why you can't stay married. That's why your wife hates you. That's why you're getting a divorce. That's why your kids don't talk to you. Because you're not drinking, but you're a goof. And you don't even see it. I sponsor these idiots. You know what I mean? Come on. Come on. You see, that's the problem with having too much time. You get to sponsor these guys that have 20, 25 years. You know, they won't tell you. They'll sound great at AA meetings. You know, they just talk to me and, you know. And they got to. You just have to go further. You got to sacrifice more, and that's what happens. And I have no idea. To me, it's a gift. I don't see why everybody doesn't see it. Why everybody doesn't read the book like this? All I do is when I talk, tell them what's happening to you. Tell them what happened to you. You know, I mean, I just want people ask. I don't understand it myself. I don't get it. I swear I don't get it. The other day, somebody said to me, he wanted to know what meetings I go to or how many meetings. I said I don't even know how to explain it. I'm never not in a meeting. I mean, I don't even understand how I survive in business. I really don't. I'll meet in the morning at 7:30, 8 o'clock in the morning with a couple of guys, and I'll drink coffee, you know, and I go to Bible studies at night, and I go to church, and I go to a bunch of AA meetings, and I do this stuff, and every day I have lunch with anywhere between 6 and 12 guys, because God will show you how to create the fellowship you crave, and if you want Him and you want spiritual fellowship, you can have it. I mean, do you guys eat lunch every day? I eat lunch every day. Well, who says you have to eat it alone? You know, who says you can't create a fellowship around you of other people, like-minded believers, and you can sit down and you can have lunch with people that they talk about God? You think that's corny? It is. That's okay. You know, keep you sober for about 30 years and you feel good about yourself. Instead of sitting around and eating lunch and worrying about your problems. I mean, you are who you hang around with. What you're going to think about is going to be dependent upon who you hang out with. I'm telling you. If you want to know why you think the way you think and what's important to you, just think about who you're hanging around with and the conversations you're having. And if the conversations are about money and things and power and this, that's what you're going to walk away thinking about. And you're going to feel lousy about yourself and other people all the time. And you're not even going to know why you feel lousy, because you expose yourself to that stuff and you refuse to go after the real good stuff and hang around the people that you should be hanging around. I mean, it's so simple. And it's so difficult for alcoholics because we don't see it, because we think what this thing is about is you go to a meeting at 7 o'clock and you leave at 8 o'clock. You go to a meeting at 8:30 and you leave at 9:30. That's what we think Alcoholics Anonymous is. That's what we think this whole thing is. Put God in a little box for an hour at a time, maybe three times a week, and God forbid don't talk about God. And we can't. We wonder why we're not drinking, but we feel crappy about ourselves. You know, to me it's sort of clear, but I don't know. Some people are going to get this thing. So God bless you, and I really appreciate you letting me, spill all this stuff, that my guts out to you about this stuff. I really hope everybody here, gets the joy that I've gotten out of this thing over the last 31 years. It's just a phenomenal deal. God bless you. Thank you very much.